Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome into your Wednesday edition of A Numbers Game, live on VSiN and the DraftKings Network from Bar Canada in downtown Las Vegas, right here at the D. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin, our producer, is here once again. He never misses a day, Kelly. Great to have you back. How are you hanging in there with no NBA? I feel bad for you.
You know what? It's a little bit of a vacation and reset time. You know, yeah. It's a mental vacation. Like I watched college basketball last night. It was it was an exciting product. It was a little bit of a mix up for me. Yeah, I mean Daytona on Monday, college basketball yesterday. Really mixing up what I'm doing. Yeah.
The double that everybody wants to go right in. Are you like the Doc Rivers of maybe needing, you know, diving in too early on college basketball? Are you thinking, why am I starting now? Why don't I just wait till March Madness?
I watched it. I wasn't firing away, Ben. Don't worry. Yeah, I wasn't firing away on bets. Yeah. I'll save that for March Madness. Yes.
I'll save that.
When I've had a few beverages in me on Friday afternoon.
The patented Kelly Bidlin at Florida State alma mater sweat is a sight to behold.
How are they doing this year? I have no idea.
They're all right. ACC is terrible.
Like, are they going to make the tournament? I know they were like, meh.
Nah. I mean, okay. And ACC has really fallen off, so there's really not going to be many bids coming out of that conference in general.
Really putting Ben on the hot seat right out of the gate.
No, they're not.
Seconds
they're
in.
Hey, Leonard Hamilton's still doing his thing, but as head coach. But yeah,
it's incredible.
Not much to like about Florida State. Could be worse, but there's a way to go. We'll have a lot of college basketball talk. I have a couple bets that we'll talk about here in about 15 minutes or so. And our pal Dallin Cuff, who was burning the midnight oil last night in studio for ESPN, Dallin will join us to talk some of the college basketball biggest matchups on the card tonight, as well as breaking down Champions League today. So we have Dallin coming up at 11 a.m. Eastern time. Before that, our pal Cian Najad from the Monumental Sports Network and Sportsline will join us to talk Mexico Open. We go south of the border in the PGA. Fresh episode of Long Shots out now with Kelly, Matt Brown, and Wes Reynolds. So we'll get Kelly's full thoughts as well on the Mexico Open. And also have to get into some NFL draft talk as well, because that is now the cycle that we're moving into. We'll also get some NHL talk as well with our pal Jonathan Davis from Sirius XM on the ice. We've got everything covered, Kelly. Even the college football, where, you know, I feel bad every time I say Kelly Bidlin, Florida State alum, and still bitter about what happened in the playoff committee decision going back to last season. But we do have now a new change that has been made. The committee late yesterday approves the new 12-team playoff format with the now 5 conference champions plus the top 7 at-large bids. Is there no better example, though, of how flawed the current college system is right now than the fact that this committee basically had to wait for the president of Washington State, who represents the Pac-12, whose school isn't even in the Pac-12 anymore, to confer with the president of Oregon State, who's also not in the Pac-12 anymore, to figure out how they wanted to do the voting? Because those were the guys that continue to push everything back and back and back, trying to wait, all right, what's actually going to be best for our team? And it's hilarious to me, Kelly, that you get Kirk Schultz, who comes out and basically admits, well, yeah, I guess for us, the only way we can qualify is being an at-large, because we're not in a conference anymore that's a top 5 conference. So let's just go ahead and approve this format. College football, just general hierarchy here in a nutshell, Kelly, in 2024. But that does get approved. It's
really
the right decision. But that's what it all came down to. And that's what's crazy about the whole ordeal.
How does that make any sense?
It does.
I don't know if I knew. The Washington State president was representing the Pac-12?
So each conference has a particular representative. It's not like not like every single school in each of the Power Fives gets a vote on this. They assign one representative. And in a great case of how flawed especially the Pac-12 is, a conference that has been falling apart at the seams, their representative is a president who, as part of making a vote for one of the biggest decisions in the current landscape of college football, is the president of a school that is playing as part of a Mountain West schedule next year, and it is in the process of leaving altogether.
Sure. Everybody should be really confident with how this is going to go. I mean, this is it's stuff like this, right? Where we're talking about changes, and yes, I like the idea of an expanded playoff. Whatever, you make more big time college football games, it's great. I do think it hurts the regular season a bit, but you know, at least nobody gets screwed like Florida State might have this last time around. But it is it's quite hilarious, yes, when you get into the details of how they get this stuff figured.
Well, the other really funny part of this, too, is that the College Football Playoff Committee, so it's, you know, the 5 conference champions, next 7 at large. Seems pretty simple, right? You're going, all right, yeah, you have the group of 5. but the College Football Playoff Committee, they will intentionally not refer to it as the Group of Five, because there is that long shot chance. You know, you think about the current, you know, Group of Five here, there, you know, it could be, you know, the AAC is considered the, you know, the final of the Group of Five. You could have a Conference USA team. You could have a Mountain West team who maybe they are higher in the overall rankings. They technically, or even the Sun Belt or MAC, there's a world in which one of those conference champions is actually your fifth here, Kelly. So that's the even funnier part about this. The committee can't even go and just and straight up tell you these are the five conference champions, and then we have seven at-larges. It's basically, well, it's the four legacy Power Fives as we know it, four of the five. The fifth is sort of this floating potential fifth conference that could be one of four different leagues.
But it will and be then, a conference champion in
yes,
that fifth
a,
spot?
A, okay. A conference champion.
But it could be anywhere.
But it doesn't have to be the American.
Wow.
So figure that all out. That's your latest college football college football news going on right now. It is very important going forward, but it just more puts a magnifying glass on the general hypocrisy and unorganized structure of the top of the college football governing bodies. And we, the fans and the bettors now, are the ones who try to sift through this here. Futures is the biggest implication going forward when you talk about now a playoff being expanded. Speaking of futures, though, Kelly, it's late February. It's a great time to overreact to college basketball, what's going on right now. Whole lot of people, not necessarily in panic mode, but going, all right, is this UConn team really all that they were cracked up to be? Is the Huskies had a 14-game winning streak, longest in the country, hadn't lost in 2024. They go to Omaha last night and get the doors blown off. The Creighton Blue Jays come in and absolutely own them from start to finish. There was a guy who hadn't hit a three all season, Kelly, who was like basically Steph Curry. Kind of tells you in a nutshell how the Blue Jays night was going last night.
It was, I feel like that's Creighton every other
year. Well, it was pretty nuts. They're getting guys all over the place to contribute. And now you go, all right, UConn, who are they really after losing 85-66? A very public play last night, who lose by far as a 2.5-point favorite, but they're still 5-1 on the futures board. And I would argue this is easily the best thing that could have happened to UConn in this run-up to the NCAA tournament. A NCAA tournament that has so much history of gauntlet running and front-running regular season teams getting to the one-and-done format and not necessarily falling flat on their face, but the pressure building up to a point that it is so hard to sustain. How many examples do we need to look at? John Calipari himself can speak to this as a Kentucky head coach, and even going back to his Memphis days where that was a team who ran through conference play, wasn't tested whatsoever, and all of a sudden you get to the big dance, one team starts getting hot from three, you get down a little bit, and you don't really know how to react to that. I thought the quotes last night from head coach Bobby Hurley were extremely telling, where he came out and straight up said, it's hard to be motivated in a huddle when you haven't lost in 2 months. Think about how that translates forward, Kelly, to an NCAA tournament. Of course, you're going to have motivation, but you haven't been tested like that. You haven't actually been knocked off. Where do you really go there and get the fire? You know, UConn, you think about them compared to last year when they had a huge early season and into the start of Big East play swoon, ended up only being a 4 seed and had all the motivation in the world, being, as they felt, disrespected by the committee. It's totally the opposite now this year, where they have a target on their back. They're the number one team in the country, and they've been that way all season. They are the favorites and should be to win the big dance. This is the best thing that could happen to them because of that motivation going forward, and because they now can go back to a really good head coach and say, all right, guys, let's lock in. Let's be better at three-point defense, where they've been outside the top 100 all season.
Okay, Jared and I were talking about it kind of the past couple of days. Is this, you know, would it be a good thing or a bad thing kind of for this team to pick up an L along the way here? And you're probably right, Ben. I think this probably re-centers them a bit. You get to look forward, look ahead. And if you're a better, UConn was 5-1 yesterday. They're 5-1 today after a loss. So we talked about this. Like, with the rest of their schedule, not really all that tough still, right, Ben? So, like, this is, you know, if you want to get involved on UConn, I don't know if I'd be getting involved in the short of a number with the NCAA tournament and how the layout is, you know, how it works. But you're talking about a number that's probably not getting any longer by the time we get to the tournament, right?
That's part of it. It's not any value you want to be actually betting. And really, outside of a game at Marquette, which is the rematch of that top five game from last weekend, where UConn won by 28 and was basically proclaimed, you had writers saying, all right, is this UConn team better than last year's team? As if to say, don't even play March Madness, it's over. You know, we go so far on one side of the spectrum, and now we've come probably too far back on the other side going, oh, what's wrong with this team? They just got blown out by a pretty good Creighton team who is, you know, in the 30-1 range to win the big dance and has the tools to make a deep run with a guy like a Ryan Kalkbrenner, who was a stud last night, a 7-foot big who can step out and also shoot threes. At 5-1, it's, you know, it's not a team, Kelly, to your point, I'm not betting 5-1 right now just because it's buying low on a team that lost. The odds didn't even move, so you can't even say that. At the end of the day, though, UConn is still going to be the favorite, and they should be. And they should be by margin, considering the teams right in their same ilk of Purdue and Houston, who are untested, who have struggled in the big moments in high-leverage NCAA tournament spots. Because UConn still has a head coach in Dan Hurley who just won a national title and proved that his in-game decision-making was absolutely elite in the stretches where they needed it most last year. You still have a do-it-all guard in Tristan Newton, who is an unbelievable player on both ends of the floor and has been rated as one of the top 10 players in the country. You still have dead-eye three-point shooters like an Alex Caravan. There are two different shooters shooting over 40% this year from three, Caravan as well as Cam Spencer. And you got back from injury your 7-2 center, Donovan Klingon, who's an absolute beast on the boards, top 10 in offensive rebounding this year. It's still the most complete team in college basketball. Don't let late February results, when teams are kind of in the dog days of the season, impact you as to thinking what are the team's likelihoods of winning it all come March.
I like it, man. I like it. Like, it makes sense. And yeah, this is the get the battle tested time of the schedule, right? Like, get prepared for the tournament time, man. Get these L's out of the way.
Time of year. It's a whole lot of conference revenge, long road trips, and we'll talk about some of those situational spots. I love the situational betting this time of year. And we will have two plays to reflect that coming up next. A lot of big matchups here on the card today. We'll go to the Mountain West. We'll go to the SEC when we come back. It is a numbers game here from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We know you've been busy with football, which is why the VSiN experts have just released our free NBA at the break betting primer. Get the free guide today and bet the NBA smarter with futures bets to make right now. Eastern and Western Conference analysis plus betting tips for the rest of the season. Visit VSiN.com/guide to get your free copy today. That is VSiN.com/guide. I say relieved because I know Kelly Bidlin will be relieved once we get to the second half of the season underway here.
What a pro.
It's out. Have the gears turning somewhere in your head.
Great conference previews in there by Zach Cohen and JVT, two of the greats. Great breakdowns by them. I wrote a little piece up on the MVP race. Good stuff in there. If you've been watching NBA, I think there's some stuff for you in there. If you haven't been watching the NBA, it's a good time to jump in, out that primer, get you set for the rest of the season.
We will go heavy NBA tomorrow. I've got a division future I will throw your way
The
show. We're already previewing tomorrow's show at 10:15 a.m. Eastern time. We're just starting this show, but today we have a lot on the college basketball card for you as we are getting closer, inside a month to Selection Sunday as part of the NCAA tournament. And a couple of really interesting spots for tonight. Kelly, if I were to tell you we have a total of 174 tonight in college basketball in the SEC, would you? And
whoa!
Two top 25 teams, could I get you to commit and watch?
Is that something you might be interested in? Yeah, I'm a little interested in that. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
We get Florida on the road at Alabama tonight.
Oh, I know I'm rooting for it. Roll Tide!
We got the first Roll Tide of the day already out of our system here, and we're 16 minutes into the show. This is a game right now. Alabama laying is 8.5-point favorites here. The market from 8 to 8.5 overnight. 174 right now, your total. This actually was at one point 174.5, which gives you the old implied score of 91.5 to 83.5. You got to love that one. That's where we're starting on a total. But, hey, these are two of the best offensive teams in the country, each top 10. They each play really fast, and they each struggle on defense, right? What's not to love? The issue here to me is how Florida will try to match up against Mark Sears in Alabama. Mark Sears has just been absolutely unreal. You're talking about a 6'1 guard who's 16th in the country in true shooting. It's really hard to do. Mark Sears does it well on both ends of the floor. Alabama, to me, is just a better, well, more oiled machine than exactly what Florida tries to do to you on the other side of the ball here. Because Alabama's better on offense. They play faster. Defense is slightly better. And it's two teams that are finesse. They shoot a ton of threes. And yet the efficiency numbers just all point to Alabama this season. They take the six most threes in the country. They're top 10 in three-point percentage. They're also top 11 in two-pointers. So it is a really hard team to slow down. And we get these situational spots, too, where look at Florida's last six games. Five of those have been decided by two possessions or less. There were two of those games that went to overtime that Florida won. And the only non-close game in the stretch for Florida was one of their biggest games of the season. They upset top 10 Auburn at home by 16 in a game where they were way, way up in from the start and were super motivated. Whole lot of juice there at the O-Dome in Gainesville. You get these stretches toward the back end of the conference season where Florida's been playing so many tight games. As much as I'm usually not one to want to lay a big number in conference play, Kelly, 8.5 in a game that's lined almost 175 is not the same as laying 8.5 in your old school early 2000s Big Ten clash with a total in the 120s.
Right.
Give me Alabama here to win this game by double digits, and I don't see how Florida slows them down on the defensive end where they're 191st defending threes this year.
Yeah, I like it. I'm just pulling up some KenPom numbers right now. Yeah, this is this Alabama team, man, they're just pure offense these days, right?
It is. Well, it's the other part of it, too, for Nate Oates, they have a couple of these games where they just there are times where they just don't show up on defense. A lot of times that happens on the road, and Nate Oates, known as a fiery guy in coaching circles, last bad game was the rivalry game at Auburn. Alabama comes out, they give up 99 in that game, and were pretty much no-shows. They got blitzed from the start, lost by 18. Since then, Alabama scored 209 points over the last two games. Sears has gone off at each of those, 23 Ooh. Points and three steals each of the last two. You don't see those sorts of numbers in today's college basketball all that often. Clear to me that Alabama has responded in a big way from that, and there might have been some strict talking to there in the locker room. So Alabama in a good spot tonight. I laid 8.5 with the Tide, and that's still available there, market-wide.
Yeah, you're talking Bama. So Bama first in offensive efficiency, what, Florida 10th? And then you're talking Bama 72nd in defense and Florida 90th. Okay.
Now, yeah, not two teams. They'll both be in the Big Dance. Not two teams I would be betting on to make runs, because when you don't really defend, when it's defense optional, Kelly, it's not usually a recipe.
I was going to bring it up. So Bama, I feel like I'm not hearing many people believing in Bama making much of a run.
Correct. And it's really
because of that.
It's exactly. You don't tend to see those teams who basically are going to be super reliant on having an unbelievably efficient offensive night winning every game in the NCAA tournament.
Now, last year were they more balanced with Brandon Miller out there? Is that what it was, or is it really that loss that they're feeling on the defensive side, or is it it's more than that?
I think it's the way Nate Oates sets up his team. You know, last year they were really, really good on the defensive end, but you know, I thought Miller was able to hide a lot of those deficiencies just, you know, behind them. That was just how good of a player he was, being such a lengthy guy on the, you know, both perimeter and on the interior. But when they faced San Diego State, it wasn't exactly known as a great offensive team. I mean, they couldn't get a stop down the stretch.
Yeah.
And that kind of shows you how sometimes the numbers don't necessarily tell the full story in that. And Alabama was a team that lost in the Sweet 16 last year to the eventual runners-up. So play number one, that's Alabama -8.5. San Diego State, though, Kelly, they've been still a solid team this year. They're part of a Mountain West that is absolutely loaded, projected to get six bids in this season in the Mountain West, a much deeper conference than even some of the Power Fives, like an ACC that's really weak this year. To the Mountain West we go, and it's Colorado State on the road at New Mexico, two teams who are each near the top of the league standings at 8-5. Colorado State's a projected six seed wall, and New Mexico slipped a little bit recently. They're more like a 10 seed. It is so funny to me, Kelly, how people have just completely dove in and blindly backed the single narrative, which is the unranked home teams who are favorite against the road ranked teams. People think this is just some blind, you know, you don't even think about it. You don't even think twice. You just put it in the account and you count your money later. Well, the odds makers certainly know that, and they have adjusted. These lines now have really been baked in so far that the value is only on the dog with the road teams. And this year now, if you're looking at those exact systems on the unranked home favorites against the road ranked team, they're only 18-17 against the number. And if you're laying -110 vig every single time on those bets, you're losing money this year. And this is another great example where Colorado State, New Mexico, extremely even on paper. And yet New Mexico's now laying 7 at home at the Pit, where they've lost two straight. Team that's 2-3 in their last five games. Last time I checked, New Mexico is only good on offense because they have a ton of possessions. They're really not even that efficient. And you have a very balanced Colorado State team who has the best single player in this game, the 6 foot senior Isaiah Stevens, who's an absolute unit with his unbelievable vision. He's third in the country in assist rate, also a 44% 3-point shooter. And I'm getting 7 on the road here, Kelly. I played this at 6 last night. Obviously, you know, I threw like a half unit on this thinking was thinking maybe 6 would be the threshold here and it would come back the other way. But now we're up to 7, which really surprises me. And I understand why people are doing it. They see that number and they think, oh, this has to be a system and a sign to bet it. But I completely disagree with where we're at here.
Is that what you're seeing? So you're seeing that a lot in the market
this year? It's literally
like they're just blind steam on these types of situations where we get ranked team against non-ranked team and the non-ranked team's favorite.
It ends up being 2.5 points higher than it should be. And you're talking tight conference games. Like, I get it. Colorado State's 1-5 in conference games on the road this year. They are a team that's much better at home in Fort Collins than they are on the road. There is conference revenge here. Colorado State won the first game at home by 8 points. I understand all that. So do the odds makers.
Right.
Yeah. that's what it comes down to. And this is a much more balanced team, Colorado State, at the end of the day. Third in assist to field goal ratio. Really good at shooting twos. They get great looks on the interior because of the passing of Isaiah Stevens. And New Mexico is just average. They're outside the top 100 in defending both twos and threes this year. It's not like the Pit is some impossible place to play in, as multiple teams have gone in there and won, like at UNLV recently, who's not even going to be in the big dance most likely. It's a lot to ask now to lay 7 against a team that consistent and solid on both ends in a Colorado State. That's why I like the Rams.
All right, I like it. So what you got, 2 college basketball plays?
We got 2. Laying 8.5 with Alabama. We took 6 with Colorado State, and you can do a lot better. You can get 7 right now. I'm not going to go back in and re-bet it, just kind of out of principle, Kelly. I mean, I'm not looking to chase because, there have been a lot of games, and we've seen big moves in college basketball where line might move 3-4 points, and then the other team ends up winning, in a landslide. That has been a theme of the college basketball season. So I wouldn't overreact just, as much as we always say, the closing line value, you want to get that. I wouldn't overreact just because you make an early bet and all of a sudden the line goes, a half point to a point against you.
I don't really know. JVT and I have talked about this a bit. I don't really know. Like, it's been such a thing in the NBA this year, too, where I've had line moves go against me. But I do think it's a – and really, for the most part, have, not affected my winning. And it is one of those, like, of what your point of, I don't think it's chasing or anything like that. I think there is probably an inclination for a lot of people out there to add on at a better number. But assuming you're betting this, you have a number in your head or you're making a number of what you think this spread should be. And if it was good enough at 6 to bet it at that, there's no reason that you need to go add on more just because the line moved 1 point.
And sure, you're getting a full 2 possessions with that 6 as well. Couple of plays for us on the college basketball hardwood. Tonight, we will transition, talk a little golf with our pal C. Najad from the Monumental Sports Network next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're looking for a betting edge on college basketball, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our daily best bets emails, 24/7 video access, the upcoming College Hoops betting guide, bracket breakdowns, plus full access to VSiN.com with our exclusive betting split breakdowns on every game. Visit VSiN.com/pro to subscribe today. That is VSIN.com/pro. Kelly Bidlin's gotten all the college basketball talk he can handle first half hour of the show. So we're
gave you everything I got.
He emptied the tank. Thanks, man. Thanks for just letting me catch my breath for, 15 seconds at a time. That's all I wanted.
No problem.
That's all I wanted. Now we transition to something Kelly loves, and we will talk about a bunch here coming up on the show. It's the golf as the PGA Tour goes south of the border here to Puerto Vallarta, and our pal C. Najad joins us right now. Great to have Sia back here on A Numbers Game. Find him on the Monumental Sports Network as well as host on Sportsline at C. Najad. Sia, I know Kelly has talked a lot on this show about his mental fortitude here, trying to stomach 6 triple-digit winners in 7 events so far on the PGA Tour. How has that all broken down for you with the way your card has kind of been formulated here in the early part of the season?
Well, it's interesting. By the way, Ben, nice to be with you, Kelly, obviously, as well. you know, I haven't hit the outrights. I'm all for long shots, let's be honest, but I am not hitting Nick Dunlap. I'm not hitting Hideki at 90-1, although I probably should have. Anytime Hideki's at such a long number, we do know he has superstar ability. What I have been good at so far is kind of round matchups and tournament matchups, things of that nature. So that's kind of the good news, because I think that is the bread and butter when it comes to golf betting, and certainly Kelly can tell you that as well. That's kind of the sustainable model, right? It's great to hit an outright. It's great to hit a first-round leader, but if you can be ahead on your head-to-head matchups, your round three balls, your round head-to-heads, that's where you know you can sustain it long term.
Yeah, I at least, Kelly, really enjoy when Sia comes out with, you know, with the Sia live bets, and it's the like round two, three ball. And I'm like, this wasn't even on my radar. And then I look yep. and I'm like doing the stuff in my head, and I'm like, wait, that actually makes a lot of sense. So I feel like that has probably been Sia as we've gone through, where you can look kind of in tournament here, you know, it applies same principles, right, as in-game betting in other sports. You can see where the strokes gain numbers are at in real time. You can see the matchups, and especially further down the board where the odds might not be super tight, you go, okay, there could be some edges here to exploit, even if it's not the sexy, all right, here are long shots for betting to win outright.
Well, that's the beauty of golf betting, because it's impossible for them to have efficient markets across all of these potential bets. These aren't just pre-tournament bets, right? You mentioned it mid-tournament, where sometimes I'll tweet these plays out, and you've got pretty much every matchup on the board, or at least every player that has a matchup in large part across all the books. So, you know, it's such a big delta between the efficiency of that type of market, where you've got potentially 156 players and matchups every single day, and resetting those matchups every single day in three balls, versus like an NFL Sunday. Sure. Even the prop market in the NFL is going to be more efficient, I love betting the NFL sides and totals and the prop market. But if we're talking about efficiency of markets, you're going to find at least efficient on a sport like golf, which isn't as popular. And certainly when you have such a multitude of bets, that's where the edge is going to be.
See Najad with us on a numbers game as we preview the Mexico Open. If there is the elephant on the green this week, it's the putter of Tony Finau, who ranks 169th out of 170 on the PGA Tour this year, Sia, in those putts from 4 to 8 feet. It's been an absolute disaster so far for Finau, and yet he's the favorite, overwhelmingly so, because he's finished runner-up and champion each of the last 2 years here at Vedanta Vallarta. How are you approaching Finau this week?
Well, some might say because he's not 170 out of 170, the glass is half full instead of half empty. So let's just try to stay positive on Tony Finau. But the reality is that, like, listen, he's been really good here. When he lost, it's only been two times on this course, he lost to Jon Rahm. So no shame in that. I mean, he's obviously great, and I expect him to be great again, and I expect the putter to be just fine for him, because these Paspalum greens, they present such a different sort of challenge than maybe the greens he's been putting on as of late. So, I mean, I think he's going to be okay with the putter. Am I taking him at 7 or 8 to 1? No, I'm not, because I think there's enough guys in the chase pack that can just have four rounds that, you know, in aggregate are better than Tony Finau. So if Tony Finau was 14 to 1, we'd be having a different conversation. I think he's going to do fine. I think he's likely going to land in the top 10, but I'm not betting him.
It makes sense when you think about only six of the top 60 in the world rankings are in this field, and you have some guys we're used to seeing longer numbers on who are now a little bit shorter. Because of that, Sia, where did you look to start your card here, at least on the outright market?
Yeah, I started with Steven Yeager. I mean, if I'm being honest, I look at his metrics and I want to be a little bit more impressed with his metrics, but I do think this is, first of all, he's been just fine, but except for his last tournament. I do think this is a potential field where Steven Yeager can finally break out. I mean, he's got enough length off the tee. He's good enough with the iron play. The putter can sometimes plague him, but again, on these Paspalum greens, I expect him to do pretty well. The history is okay here. Actually, it's better. It's a little bit better than okay, if memory serves. I think he's been inside the top 20 both times he's played here. Yep. I think this is one of those fields where we can finally see Steven Yeager in the winner's circle, and I'll say the same about Taylor Pendrith. Taylor Pendrith has really kind of, like, I would say the last 6 months of last year, he was really bad. And we were waiting for Taylor Pendrith to like start being a good again. I mean, he had an injury to shake off about a year ago. He's starting to get back into form, and this is such a good course fit for him. So him and Yeager at 25 to 1, and I'll get to my other guy at 25 to 1 in a second. I think they're really good course fits, especially Taylor Pendrith. He's good with the long irons as well. The other guy I really like, and I got it 35 to 1. I even tweeted this out right when the lines came out, because I had a feeling the number was going to go down. I said, hey, everybody, my first bet is going to be Keith Mitchell at 35 to 1. And I didn't move the market. I'm not saying I did. I think a lot of people moved the market, but it went down to 25 to 1 within maybe a couple of hours. I think Keith Mitchell is really primed again in this field to play really well. He was T17 at the Farmers. Now that's definitely a different course. But what I love about Mitchell is he was T17 at the Farmers, and we're starting to see the off the tee stuff really bounce or come back for him. And Keith Mitchell is he's such a good course fit. If he is popping with the off the tee numbers and the driving distance, which I fully expect him to do, I think he absolutely can win this tournament. So those are three guys I like in the kind of the shorter shot market, 25 to 30 to 1. I'll give you two long shot outrights real quick. Johnny Vegas, ball striking. We really saw it last week. Or the last time he played. And if the ball striking is there, this is a really good course for Johnny Vegas. And then Michael Kim's another guy that's emerging with the long iron play, with the off the tee game. Both he and Johnny Vegas are in that 55 to 60 to 1 range. I think they've got a viable shot to win it.
We're talking Vedanta Vallarta, Mexico Open here with our pal Sina Jad right now on a numbers game. It's been viewed as a bomber's paradise. You know, the issue is there's not a whole lot of data. We only have 2 years of the tournament. Is it as easy to just say as, all right, focus on your big hitters, your guys who hit the long irons well, and just go from there? Or how much other feel did you try to incorporate, considering the stats and data don't really go all that far back?
Yeah, it's a great question. Unfortunately, I have a very simple answer for you. And I think the answer is yes. Normally, I want to provide a little bit more nuance, but I think this truly is one of the few courses where you can just say, hey, this is a bomber's paradise. I hope you pick the right bombers. And if you do, like, I'll give you an example. Ryan Fox has not been good. He's a good golfer, but he has not been good. If you look at the metrics, they're just terrible across the board. If you start seeing where he is in the market, he's 35 to 1 to win this tournament. When you look at the top 40, top 20 market, he's a guy that's actually getting a decent amount of respect. Even in round one matchups, I'm noticing like he's a favorite over Michael Kim at minus 120 versus plus 100. He's a guy that's been so bad, but because he's such a good course fit, because he can bomb it and potentially get hot, he's a guy that the market is actually at least moderately respecting. So it's just, to me, you can absolutely be the guy like a Mark Hubbard, who's not necessarily long off the tee, that can succeed here. Brandon Wu is another guy that succeeded here because he's great on past Palom greens. But for me, in large part, I'm looking for those bombers.
And it also reflects in now the first round leader market, where there's going to be a lot of variance, right? Talk about a bomber's paradise, a lot of birdies made out there. Vedanta Vallarta, how did you go about attacking the FRL market there?
Yeah, this will look really familiar. Taylor Pendrith, Keith Mitchell. They're no stranger to hot starts, by the way. So, I mean, I think at 40 to 1 each way, by the way, these are all morning guys. I do expect in this tournament the morning conditions to be much better. But Pendrith and Mitchell, both at 40 to 1. Jake Knapp is a newcomer. Speaking of bombers, he can absolutely bomb it. We've seen him be really successful on the Korn Ferry Tour. That is translated in the few starts on the PGA Tour. So at 50 to 1, like, I don't want to be late to the party on Jake Knapp. I don't have him as an outright. He almost was an outright. But long story short, 50 to 1, this guy can get hot. And then again, Michael Kim, I already mentioned. Sam Stevens is a really good course fit here at 66 to 1. You might find him at 55 to 1 as a first round leader in some markets. I think that's plenty worth it. He's 7,100 in DraftKings. He's super popular because he's a really good course fit. And I think Sam Stevens has a shot to be a first round leader here.
Yeah, you're gonna see a lot of the same names later, Ben, when I go to my place. Sia and I are aligned a lot. I forgot there was one bet I wanted to tail you on when you sent me stuff last night, Sia, and it was that Pendrith top Canadian. That might be my favorite bet on your card. I haven't bet that yet. I'll be adding that one for sure. Want to hit up something you brought up real quick, though, the first round leader stuff. John Rahm's comments about the wind affecting things on the morning wave versus the afternoon wave. Look it up if you haven't seen it, if you are betting this week. I think there's something very telling there on who you might want to be targeting kind of first round leader-wise and what you're going to see with some of that wind. It was something Sia just kind of mentioned.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating to look at too, and that will be the one really course defense that we see is the wind on a coastal course like that. Also, Michael Kim minus 110 over Austin Eckroat, Sia's matchup here this week. Sia, great to see you again. We love having the deep dive card on every single week of the golf betting calendar. Great to see you again. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, fellas. See you soon.
We have more to come as well on the golf because Kelly Bidlin has his full course breakdown. We have the Long Shots podcast. It is out now wherever you get your podcast. Kelly, Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, be sure to check that out as well. We'll dive a little bit deeper into the golf in a little bit. Up next, though, we continue the discussion on a numbers game. We go to the NFL talking some next team odds for quarterbacks.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5 and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. For those of you watching us on VSiN.com, YouTube TV, I got to say, Kelly, I usually listen because I'm usually in bed to a numbers game, and I never saw the animation is awesome. Gil just looking fierce, little blue steel walking in. That's great. I had noticed that before.
They always get the stuff that always gets chosen is like us getting ready for the photo shoots, which I never understand. I'm like, why are you doing the photo shoot then? Like we take everything from us getting ready and joking beforehand, you know?
That's so good. I just think of like doing play by play, and so, you know, like they'll have the social media people who will film the guys obviously getting off the bus, right? Walked into the arena, and I remember jumping like, God, those guys look so cool. Like, you should do me one time, like walk in with my briefcase. And then you realize like that whole thing is such an art. Like I look like the biggest bozo walking into the arena where I'm just like, I'm smiling way too aggressively. Like I'm really, I'm really not as put together as I think I am. And it's like, all right, yeah, you don't have to do that again. Don't kill yourself to film me walking in. Yeah. I'll sit behind the, I'm behind the microphone.
Well, what everybody gets a kick out of, it took us like 14 takes on the Bill 80 commercial where I'm just sitting here nodding my head because I was being told I was overacting too much. So that was
that's so funny.
Kill on like one line, and I was like, I guess I was acting too much.
Kelly Bidlin, famous overactor. Yeah. That's what he's definitely known for. Let's get into the NFL. We have not got a chance to discuss NFL today, but we had some interesting headlines coming out here over the last 24 hours that have impacted some odds for next team for particular quarterbacks. And who would have had this on their 2024 headline bingo card, Kelly? Chad Ochocinco saying a little birdie told me something about Russell Wilson going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And now Wilson to go to Pittsburgh is a -250 favorite on the odds board right now. Who had that in their 2024 bingo card?
I think that is the biggest thing. But before we even talk about betting and what we would bet on and where we think these guys go, just understand that these markets are moving based off of something that, I mean, I have no idea how tapped in the great Chad Johnson, Chad Ochocinco. Are we back to Chad Johnson officially? I don't even know. I feel like these guys go back after they retire. But
I feel like there should be a law where if you change it that aggressively to something like Ochocinco,
it has to stick.
You're just not allowed.
Yeah, you're not allowed to go
legally
back.
You can do whatever you want, but you just, the rule of sports media, you can't do
it. I'm with you on that. I agree. I sign off on that one. But you got, Chad Ochocinco talking about this and saying, a little birdie told him that he's connected here to Pittsburgh. And boy, did we move quick. This was like -130, goes all the way up to -250 for Russell Wilson to be on the Steelers. Keep in mind, still a member of the Denver Broncos as of right now. So next team set at -250. I think that's the biggest thing that we can point out right away. Now, where does he end up actually landing? Could very well be Pittsburgh. It absolutely could be. It could be Pittsburgh. I don't know what you think is going to happen this offseason with Denver, Ben. But, I do expect that he's going to be somewhere else. It just feels very aggressive for that to be -250.
Right. Everything you hear is that even though it's a giant price tag to eat if you're Denver, they are going to and have to move on from him. That is all the things I have read and have heard about on this front here for the Denver Broncos. And the part of it too that's hard, Kelly, is it's you think about, okay, what's going to be the right fit? It has to be some sort of a roster where, not to say they don't care about the culture, right? But Russell Wilson is a guy who has toxic written all over him. He's clearly, all the reports have been, he's just been a one-man wrecking ball in locker rooms. Stats, even last year the stats weren't that bad. I mean, Wilson still finishes a top half of the league starting quarterback. His advanced numbers were, in some categories, top five, like in completion percentage over expectation. He's still able to deliver a pretty good ball in the right system when he has time and space to throw. It's just every other intangible, his decision-making, not really looking to freelance on his own, not doing the things the coaches want to, being a diva in the locker room, bringing in his own guys. It leads me to think about the other options here, which are an old school guy like Antonio Pierce, who's trying to bring back the old school Raider way, which is certainly not in any way affiliated with divas.
Yeah, good
Mike
call.
Tomlin in Pittsburgh, who is about the last person you would expect to want to work with Russell Wilson based on all the things that we know about him. And that's where you start going down the line. I would even throw out Atlanta here as a team where their GM is Terry Fontenot, longtime scout and assistant GM for the Saints, very, very tight with Sean Payton. You think Terry Fontenot, who is very, very close with Payton, is going to say, let me take a chance on this guy. Let me just assume I can rehab his image. I don't think there's any way he goes to Atlanta because of that relationship. You have to think, based on all the negativity that's come out of that room, that Sean Payton's telling his pal Terry Fontenot, yeah, stay away with the 10-foot pole.
Okay, I think that's a great point, and that makes sense. I do think, though, that Atlanta is talented enough, though, that they would have to consider Russell Wilson. They have to consider, is this guy good enough of a quarterback still that with everything that we've got going on here, with the weapons that we have on offense, these young weapons that we have on offense, with the defense that played as well as they did a year ago, can we not consider bringing in a guy who's won a Super Bowl? And can we punch him in this offense and instantly this team goes to a next level? I'm not saying they will. And I think that's a great point, because you're right, that might just end conversations right away. But I think I hope Atlanta goes aggressively after Justin Fields and kind of just resets this youth movement there on the offensive side of the ball. I think if they think they're even further ahead than I think they are, I think Russell Wilson's a guy they're going to consider a little bit more.
Yeah, and as much as we talk about fit and culture, right, you're spot on, Kelly, that at the end of the day, the personnel is really what matters, and it's a guy who needs to be surrounded by a team in general who's got at least a positive trajectory upward. It's why, as much as you wouldn't think this team would really be a fit, the team I kept going back to is actually New England, where who really knows what that culture is like now?
Yeah,
that Bill Belichick's
gone. Yeah, yeah.
And remember, New England did do this with another guy who was viewed to be a problem in the locker room, whose stats weren't all that bad, but was just sort of pariah in some circles, in Cam Newton, who they went to on the back end of his career. Now, Newton's numbers.
Who are you talking about? Tom Brady? Bill Belichick?
not exactly those guys. Look, Cam Newton was still 12th in completion percentage over expectation his final 2 years in Carolina, but was viewed as a guy you couldn't win with, and was 6-10 his final combined 2 seasons as a starter before getting hurt. It would make sense, at least based on the history, and especially with all the holes New England has to fill on offense, where we'll talk about mock drafts in a little bit. Does New England make that move and then be able to stake their claim to a Marvin Harrison Jr. having the number 3 pick, not having to trade draft capital to get the quarterback they want? That would at least make sense to me. It's just your guess is as good as mine if Gerard Mayo, what his actual perspective on that is as a first-time head coach. And team doesn't even have a GM.
Yeah.
It's Elliot Wolf, the son of the great Ron Wolf, who is the director of scouting, who is the closest thing New England even has to a GM right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that situation is probably the most murky. So probably would be one of the least surprising results if Russell Wilson ended up going there.
+850 for that outcome. How about the guy that is part of a team central to all the NFL draft talk? We'll get into that in a little bit, who have the number one overall pick and the decision on what to do with the quarterback in Justin Fields. Articles all over the place outlining different potential trades for Fields. And not only that, but also what the number one pick will cost for the Chicago Bears. That's really where the draft will start and end, as far as how the betting goes when we get here into the next couple months. But as far as Fields, you talk about Atlanta, Kelly. He is the favorite right now to go to the Falcons, -130. And then after that, take your best guess here. And with the new regime led by Raheem Morris, the head coach, we mentioned Terry Fontenot, the GM. Is it just Falcons or nobody, or kind of take a random stab here at the the big haystack there,
yeah,
Kelly? Play?
Yeah, I think this one's tough now. When this first opened up, and at least Atlanta was at a plus price, that was interesting to me, because I do think they're going to be pretty aggressive going after Fields here. We're going to talk about the draft stuff. I don't know about you. I don't think we see him going back to Chicago there. I think Florida. A lot of these when we talk about them, it's just. Just teams you can start crossing off names, is crossing off the list, right? Like Commanders are not going after him. Like they're drafting a quarterback. Chicago, I don't think he's going back there, so I would cross that off. I'm not betting that at all. And like the Broncos, you can't bet until you know what's going on with Russell Wilson, right? So that's you kind of got to hit those at the same time. This one's tough. I think now that we're in minus money, I would love to see him in Atlanta, though. I still think Justin Fields could be a successful quarterback in the NFL. I am in that camp. I just think Chicago has to move on from him just because of the financial situation.
Right.
I think the one that it keeps sticking out on these in all the next team markets that are posted up at DraftKings, it's the Kirk Cousins one -200 to go back to the Vikings. I know there's some reports going on, been circulating here in the past couple of days of, there might be some contract issues being worked, trying to figure out getting Cousins back. I don't think I would be shocked if he is not back with the Vikings next year. I think the only part of this you got to be careful with is the fine print of, it is where he takes his next snap. So I'd be almost more concerned about the injury situation and if he ends up missing more games and some, you know, I don't know, maybe Jared Hall all of a sudden looks like a superstar next year and takes Cousins' job away, but I think he's coming back. That's the one I would actually bet.
Minus 200 there right now. And we'll have more NFL talk coming up because draft season is upon us. Mocks are coming out. And when we come back, a numbers game continues on VSiN with our pal Dallin Cuff. Next up on the DK Network, it is the Dan Le Batard Show. We'll be right back.